This is Side Hustle with Luke and Omar. We'll explore what it takes to run a side hustle with talented individuals from different backgrounds and experiences. We will discuss things like taking the plunge, personal challenges, and the balancing act of maintaining a day job whilst side hustling to make the dream a reality. Now sit back, relax, as we talk to some of these amazing individuals.
On today's episode, we speak to Ewan Wang. Like all good side hustlers, Ewan has two running in parallel. He's the creative director of his own UX agency, while also running a successful product which empowers photographers to do what they love the most, which is to continue to shoot. Join us as we delve into Ewan's journey and hear about how he manages his personal life and work life. We really hope you enjoy this episode as much as we do. Let's get to it.
Good morning, everyone. This is Side Hustle with Luke and Omar, and today we have a special guest, Mr. Ewan. I forgot his last name. I am so sorry.
Wang.
Ewan Wang. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you. Yeah.
not the best start.
No, that's okay. You know, it happens. Like, also, my name is sometimes a little stumbles people a little bit. Like, should I say Wang or Wang or Ewan or Wan? But
great.
There you go.
Okay. Well, Ewan Wang. I will stick to that. But thank you so much for joining us on this Saturday morning. It's obviously quite early in the day. What time is it?
It's like 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. But you said you've just come back from the gym and straight to the studio.
That's right. I have a 8 o'clock like a high intensity class every Saturday. I just get it out of the way, and then I still have the whole day ahead.
That's awesome.
That's a good timing.
I'm a little bit intimidated by that. Like,
yeah, tell us about the high intensity. What was the,
Okay. I don't know. Like, you heard of like it's quite popular these days, like CrossFit. Mm-hmm. So this is not CrossFit. It's like, it takes some elements of it and it turns it into a class. It's a half an hour. Cool. It's high intensity. Yeah. You're meant to kind of work at kind of, you know, your heart's like really racing, yeah, and you feel like really out of breath. Okay. And that's the idea, just for half an hour.
And you're just sweating your ass off.
And then you sweat like hell.
Okay.
And then it's finished.
Oh, wow.
And then I just turn up, I just do whatever the instructors say.
Yeah.
Because I can't be bothered thinking about what I should be doing.
That sounds amazing.
Followed it from start to end. Yeah. And I feel like I had a great workout, and then I can get on with my day.
So you've ticked that box, and then you can kind of just keep doing what you were meant to be doing.
Yeah, it's probably like the most like healthy thing I've done the whole week. So, I mean, it sounds a little bit like, oh, whoa, wow. Yeah, you do that every day? No, just the Saturday.
Okay. So once a week.
Yeah. Well, I do more classes, but in the morning, it's only on Saturday.
Oh, stop it. You're making us feel bad about ourselves.
Yeah, I feel so bad. I just realized that my dad body is starting to kick in. And I need to start doing something like that. I think it's time to...
Well, I just stuffed my face with a bagel, and it's like, what am I doing today?
Actually, that sounds amazing. A bagel, it's great.
It was amazing at the time. But yeah, now that you're telling me about your morning, I'm regretting it. Ewan, it would be great just to give us a quick spiel just about your background, your side hustle.
Okay.
And just kind of your elevator pitch.
All right. Yeah. Oh, I think elevator pitch kind of puts a little pressure on my introduction.
Never mind. Let's remove the elevator pitch.
I'll try to keep it short.
Yes.
But actually, because you talk about side hustle, and I think that can be defined in different ways. Mm-hmm. But I like to think that I've done the side hustle twice, in a sense.
Okay.
So I was trained as a designer, as a user experience designer, and going back to 2005 or so. Mm-hmm. And it was in the agency land for a long time. I worked in an advertising agency for a while as well.
Okay.
And then at some point I kind of got disillusioned with a combination of working for someone else, not kind of seeing eye to eye with the values and the management and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then decided to start my own agency. And so I started Yump in 2013, at the end of 2013.
Cool. So that was your first side hustle?
That's right. Okay. So I had the idea that I wanted to do this while I was still at the ad agency.
Mm-hmm.
And found actually one of my old mates, was also out of his job at the time. He got retrenched from a job, and we just got together and started the agency.
Awesome. So thinking about that agency, what was that, I guess, aha moment where you decided it's time to do this side hustle for real, like, or turn it into a sort of side hustle?
Yeah, I think there is sometimes a little bit of a right time, right place, if you can call that.
When things align.
When somehow things align or the stars are aligning and you kind of feel that it's happening or it's coming on and you're like, maybe I should go for it.
Yep.
And that moment kind of came when I was still in the ad agency and I was not really enjoying my job that much, even though I had a lot of responsibility in the agency. One of my former bosses had decided to step away from some of his clients, and they all happened to be not-for-profit clients with whose work we love.
Okay.
So I really liked those clients, and the work they do was amazing. But for whatever reason, my former boss decided to basically kind of sack them overnight.
Oh, wow.
And I saw that as a bit of a, maybe that's the calling. Maybe we should go in and talk to those clients because they also need a designer, they need a developer.
So he didn't sack the client, he sacked his employees.
He changed his business, I say, structurally quite massively, which included, I guess, firing some of his clients, which happened to be not-for-profit, and some of his employees as well. And some of his employees, one of them happened to became my business partner. And so his name is Simon East, and we said, well, let's go in, and I'm the designer, he's the developer. Yep. All kind of makes sense.
That's how it usually starts, right?
Yeah, that's right. Like, or, you know, two halves of the whole process.
We
could take the client from start to end. He understood how the systems work. I understand how to run the workshops and talk to the client and get them to see the vision of the project. And we went in and I think we kept 8 of those clients going forward.
That's a good opening and like a nice beefy.
Yeah, we met them over a period of 6 months. We obviously tried our best to charm them in that period of time, and they were really, really glad and actually are very grateful that those clients kind of gave us gave us a little bit of trust, I say, at the beginning when we were kind of
just a two-man team.
No one in a sense.
Yep.
And they said, oh, you know, we'll let you guys work on it and see how we go. So everything was very kind of, there wasn't any promises or anything.
Just kind of trial.
Yeah, have a go. And we jumped in and worked very, very hard for the first 6 months.
Okay.
I would say, you know, taking no pay from the business, as you can probably expect.
Definitely.
Just trying to build something up from nothing.
Yeah.
So digging into that a little bit, was that while you were still working at the agency? So this was like a side on the side, I guess?
Yeah, I guess I quit the day job, I say, within about 2 months of us.
2 months of
ramping Yump up.
Okay, and was it within 2 months of your former boss sacking everyone?
That's right.
And the clients?
Yeah, so yeah.
Okay, and I'm assuming he sacked the non-for-profit clients because they're the least profitable.
Well, I'm not in a place to comment.
Sure.
I can't theorize why that happened, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess working for not-for-profit clients, you have to understand their budgeting cycles. They're not typical. They don't necessarily have budgeting all the time. So they go through these cycles and they need to be able to pitch for more funding.
Mm-hmm.
And so understanding how that cycle works is important to kind of having a sustainable, I say, model built around those kind of clients.
Yep.
So, and we've made it work so far. I mean, Yump is still going really well.
Awesome.
But that's kind of how we started.
Sure.
And we've never really, I say, left that identity that we built at the start.
Mm-hmm.
We still work with many social enterprises, not-for-profit clients. They're still the kind of organizations that we love helping.
Brilliant.
We like making an impact for them.
Okay.
And that's, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the first side hustle.
That's right.
Talk us through the second one.
Okay. So just just as you think that maybe that's not enough for some people.
No, we can definitely loop back, but yeah, I'm just
I'm talking about how the fact that it's like having one isn't enough.
It's never enough
to satisfy people.
It's never enough.
It's never enough.
People like us, we're like,
you want more.
You know, the jack of all trades and like master of none.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's right. So so at that time, I think going back 4 years ago, I think I've already been running Yum for about, say, 2 or 3 years with Simon. Mm. It was going well. But it's just, again, one of those things where, like I said, right place, right time. For no particular reason, another of my mates, Chris, said to me, oh, I've got this idea I'd like to talk to you about. Let's catch up for coffee. Mm-hmm. I just after your feedback, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. So we had coffee and it was clear that from that conversation, I was like, wow, what you have there is really, really, really interesting. So he's created this idea of a software for photographers. So Chris is a wedding photographer, very established, has been in the industry for a long time. Mm-hmm. He's very, very busy as a wedding photographer.
Sure.
And he saw a gap in the market. Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, I need some kind of tool or some kind of app or some kind of software to run my business. But everything I've used are terrible, looks ugly, really hard to use. Maybe there's something simpler. Mm. And I think he sat down and just worked out what he would have liked it to be.
Sure.
So he literally wireframed it, mocked it up like it was like a real software that he would use.
Yeah, cool.
Mm-hmm. And he was really into I can't remember the name of the podcast or the book that he was reading at the time.
Sure.
But what he learned from that was that you could the way to start a business is to just sell it. If you can sell it before you make it, then you've basically validated the
That's
idea.
Very important.
The idea has demand.
Yeah.
So without having a product, he has no software, no app.
Mm.
He put up a WordPress site pretty simply, pretty quickly,
mm-hmm.
and sold the idea to 100 photographers.
Yeah, wow.
Who said, yep, we believe in your vision. Mm. We love what you're trying to do. Here's our contribution. Make it happen.
Okay, so
it was kind of like a crowdsourcing type.
Exactly,
type
that's
thing.
Exactly what
I was saying. Yeah, I guess without going through Kickstarter or some of the
big
guys that you know of crowdfunding, he's kind of done it on his own.
So he kind of reached out to his network.
Yeah, Facebook groups, photography groups that he knew at that time. Mm. And he said, come check out Studio Ninja. I like to build this and make this a reality.
Mm.
If you sign up, you can get 50% off lifetime.
Sure.
And so they were what we call our champion,
mm-hmm.
Our champion users from day one.
And there's 100 like of them. The elite kind of cream of the crop.
I think they were
users.
You maybe call them like the stupid ones. The ones who gave their trust to us.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm really grateful now. I'm using that as a joke, but
of course.
But that they gave us their trust when there was nothing, no products, no software, no code, not a single line of code has been written.
Yeah.
So considering that there was nothing, what did that sales pitch look like? Like, was it like a written based thing or like videos or like how did that sort of come together to sell the idea?
I think that shows the power of the pitch, right? The power of someone's passion. If you have so much passion for something, you're able to visualize it in a way that someone can relate to it. And I think that's what Chris did really well. He was able to create a vision through words and images and show that this is something that could potentially be real.
Yeah.
In 6 months time.
Mm-hmm. So what is Studio Ninja? I'm here itching. Like I'm just you're building it up for us and you've done this and you've done that, but it'd be great just to give us a spiel about what Studio Ninja is.
Yeah. So it's a software that helps photographers cut out admin and paperwork so they can spend more time shooting.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Okay. So this is invoicing.
Yep.
Timesheets, if there are any timesheets associated.
Actually, we don't have timekeeping, but everything else. So invoicing, contracts, workflow management, managing their leads. So all the way from when a client inquires through the website, through the inquiry form, mm-hmm. it comes into the system.
Mm-hmm.
So like a typical CRM, you can call that, like people call that CRM sometimes.
Yeah, content, CRM is customer relationship management.
Customer relationship management, which is managing leads, turning the leads into projects or clients, and then taking them from start to end. So that's the invoice, that's the quote, that's the contract. So we don't deal with any of the photographer's media files. So we don't work with their images or their videos.
Sure.
They have a separate platform to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But everything admin, so documents, any kind of transaction between them and the clients.
Yeah, brilliant.
Instructions, notes, emails, a lot of email tracking between them and the clients.
Yeah, it sounds so handy. So does that happen? So as a photographer, do I then add that to my website? Like, can it like bolt into what I already have, or do you spit out like a front-facing platform for them? Like, how does that work on the front end?
Yeah, so in order to connect your website to the system, it's really just take the form, you build a form inside Studio Ninja, and it spits out a code which you embed on your website.
Amazing.
Kind of like how MailChimp, for example, would work when you embed like the sign up form on your website.
Yep.
So that's kind of the idea. And then once someone inquires through your website, the inquiry is just go straight into our system, and it starts the whole process of automating from the inquiry through to the end.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier before we started this podcast is that you were a photographer once upon a time as well.
Yeah.
Do you reckon that has influenced your passion for this side hustle?
Yeah, absolutely. I did not actually take photography into a commercial realm. Mm-hmm. So I was learning, and then I was doing some gigs for a while, part-time.
Cool.
But because I was already established as a designer and have been for quite a while before I did photography, I kind of got to this point where I was like, oh, that means I'll have to start all over again with a completely different technique. But essentially the same idea. You're still servicing clients. You're working with people. I think I'll just stick with design.
Sure.
But the passion for photography never left. Yep. So I was like, I still love photography. I love to contribute it somehow, keep it in my...
What sort of photography were you doing at the time? What keeps you kind of... What keeps that passion alive?
I think I like the idea. I just love image making. So making beautiful...
So kind of landscape, is it more street?
I'm always better with people, better with people.
So more portraits. Yep.
Even wedding photography has a lot of people involved.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to kind of manage the light. I shot a few weddings, nothing big.
So kind of capturing those moments, interactions.
That's right.
Between people.
Yeah. Nice. But I love capturing portraits. Yeah. I like working with people in general. That's when right. I was doing my photography, I also did a few exhibitions. But that was when I started, I'll focus on my design again, before I met Chris.
Okay.
And then so, back to that coffee when I had with Chris.
Sure.
At that moment, he was telling me, I've pitched it to 100 photographers and they're on board. I can make this happen. And I actually said to Chris, I said, have you ever built an app before? Have you ever built a software? He's like, no, but everything will be fine. So he was like really optimistic, very passionate.
Yeah.
And I think I might have just kind of thrown a little bit of a... seed of doubt, in his head that maybe he could not do it alone.
He's a little bit over his head.
I would say, he's always been an eternally optimistic guy.
Sure.
And that's great about his personality.
And I guess that's what gravitated you towards the idea in the first place, is that he was very passionate about it.
Yeah, and the fact that people would pay for something that doesn't exist to me was pretty amazing. Mind-blowing. Wow.
Yeah.
And I said, let's do it together. I said, look, I design software and interface for a living. I know how to make a product work. We are right. Yeah.
So how did that conversation go? Was he totally on board, or was it a bit of convincing? Or
we had a great conversation, and I think he one of the things was I saw his initial brief and I said, that's 3 pages of documents.
Yep.
You're gonna build an entire software with just 3 pages of documents. So I've seen like specifications and function requirements from developers that are like, you know, long and lots and lots of them.
Course.
So I kind of maybe gave him some idea that, hey, this is actually a lot more complex than you think. And that it really should be like a lot more of this, and you mm-hmm. need a lot more time to create all the designs and all of that. Mm. And I think he thought about it and he goes, yeah, I think you're right. Mm. I think I need help. And so that's how we decided to work together.
And Studio Ninja's been going for about
4 years now.
4 years. Oh,
yeah,
wow.
So that was 2015.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. That's really cool.
That's a long time. So how is that, I guess, balanced with Yump? So from the beginning to now of the 4 years, like I'm assuming the percentage of Studio Ninja has sort of grown over time. Like how is that sort of balanced out?
Yeah, it's an interesting. I say that like both my babies and
but you got to favor one baby over the other.
No, actually, no favorite. No, I love them both.
That's a very parent thing to say.
And so I try to put as much time as I can into both. I say both businesses and both projects.
Sure.
I'd say probably equal these days, much more equal. So the idea of side hustle is, I think when I first started my side hustle, it was taking up a little bit of my time. And then you put me more time into it, you realize, oh, wow, like for every hour that I put in, I'm getting
You're seeing the value, you're seeing the traction.
That's right. Whether it's satisfaction or number of users or number of customers or winning more projects, you start to see some results. And when you see results, it really encourages you saying, oh, maybe I'm on the right track.
Of course.
I got to try to spend a little bit more time on it, on it. And at some point, I guess, just like with the ad agency when I was still employed, I decided that, well, I have to choose now. I have to put all my time into my business, otherwise it will not grow.
Sure. Sure. It's what I wanted to get more into is your background, because you seem very entrepreneurial. You seem like a go-getter. You can recognize opportunities when they kind of come to you, and you know when to kind of pull the trigger, for lack of better words.
Okay.
What I wanted to know is kind of take us way back, you know, your upbringing. What does that look like? Family, who influenced you? Just give us some background information. That'd be great.
Okay. So I'm born in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. I wasn't born in Australia. I was born in Malaysia maybe to some Australians, kind of a typical Asian family upbringing. I have a tiger mom.
What does that mean?
Have you heard of the word Asian tiger mom?
No.
Have you seen Crazy Rich Asians?
I have.
The movie? So you know the mom in that movie, who's played by Michelle Yeoh, she did a brilliant job.
Okay.
Even though the character's meant to be a little bit funny, a little bit comedic.
Sure.
But she kind of just personify the idea of the tiger mom,
which is like all about the family, all about her offsprings doing great, and the entire reputation thing
That's right. Absolutely. Okay. There you go. Okay. Great. Awesome. Okay. There you go. Yeah.
And I haven't seen that movie, so I totally get that. So what are the other types of moms you can get, I guess? Like if you can get a tiger mom.
What kind of brands of moms can you get?
Yeah. Like what's this?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, there's a cool mom. Have you seen like Mean Girls? It's like cool moms.
Okay.
There are other kinds of moms.
Mean Girls.
I have. Yeah. Okay, cool.
but I just thought of the movie because that kind of, when I was watching Crazy Rich Asians, I was like, this is a comedy, but wow, the elements of truth in here.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
I thoroughly enjoyed that movie.
Okay, great. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, so you have a kind of an idea of like an Asian tiger mom. Okay. So
but did you come from a filthy rich crazy
not the rich part. No, actually my parents grew up very poor. Mm-hmm. And what they did really well was they were able to build a business. So they spent their life building our family business, which is an accounting practice in Johor Bahru, which is a city in Malaysia just across the border from Singapore.
Yeah, okay.
So Johor Bahru is the second largest city in Malaysia. So you would heard of Kuala Lumpur, mm-hmm. which is our capital.
Yeah.
And Johor Bahru is the second largest, but most people don't really know it. It's quite industrial. Not much happens there except for good food. And the biggest thing about Johor Bahru is it's right next to Singapore.
Mm.
So you can jump on a bus and cross the border and you're in Singapore. Yeah. So it's very attractive for Singaporeans to come over and spend money and have a cheap holiday, yeah, basically. Yeah. So it's kind of like it has this reputation as being a border town to Singapore. Mm-hmm. And I grew up there. I went to school in Singapore because my parents thought that that would be better education across the border. It was very expensive. So, you know, I had a scholarship that helped. But the family business is accounting. So they, it's been going for 45 years now.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And thankfully, I'm the youngest of four children.
So you didn't have to get dragged into the family business?
Well, I was asked when I was 18 whether I would want to be an accountant. And I thought that meant, do you want to be an accountant and take over the family business? I said no.
Yeah.
And thankfully, my mom did not ask any more questions. And that was it.
What was the reason for your answer?
I think, why did I say no?
Yeah.
So I've always been interested in design and art as a child. I loved drawing and all that. And I thought, if I want to go to university, I want to grow that skill. And growing up in Singapore, in Malaysia, you have the education system is quite quite strict.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is expected to be pretty homogeneous. You learn your math, your science, you get good grades, and you go to university and become a doctor and lawyer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I can definitely relate. I come from that background.
Okay, great. Yep. There you go. Yeah, so there's this pressure on you to do that. And so I knew that I was different, I say, as a child wanting to do more design, wanting to do more art.
Mm.
And, you know, I don't know about Australia, but when I was growing up, my parents would say, like, not my parents, but certainly aunts or uncles or people that we know would say, oh, why do you want to do art? Like, that's, you know, you won't get paid for that. There's no future for you in the creative arts. And when you hear that a lot, you start to think, oh, maybe they're right. You start believing them. But I was like, oh, but I want to give it a try. So when I was 18, I decided to come to Australia to study. And I did design at Swinburne University.
Okay.
And I thought, because I grew up in an Asian background where I was the artistic boy.
Sure.
Right? Because everyone else...
He's doing the quotation things with his fingers.
That's right. But because everyone else was math and science, for example. And so that became my identity, like I was the artistic boy. And then I came to Australia and I realized I'm the most boring designer you'll ever find here.
So just before you tell us more about your Swinburne experience, I wanted to find out, at which age did you figure out that you had a bit more of a creative kind of personality, or you were a bit more artistic? Was it at a certain age? Did you experience something that kind of put you in that path?
I have a photo of my mom showed me. I have a photo of myself when I was four, with pencils and paper all in front of me and drawing.
Yeah, wow.
So I think from a young age, maybe around that time,
sure,
it's this idea that, oh, you're so good at drawing. Oh, you must be, you know, kind of fits itself.
Gotcha.
So you start developing this idea that, oh, I'm good at this.
Yep.
I can draw.
Yeah. But growing up, no one really kind of honed in on that talent of yours. No one kind of nurtured it, or is that too harsh to say?
I think they did, as much as society would be okay with.
Yep.
So I did take an extra subject called art, which other kids didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I think in my school of 1,000 students, only 9 students did art.
So you kind of knew deep in yourself, like, this is what I want to be doing, like what you're saying kind of thing, like, I'm interested in this, I'm going to pursue this kind of thing.
That's right. So you start developing this idea, I started developing this idea that I could do this. I'm a little bit different. I'm one of 9 kids going through high school who's doing art. So I want to act on it more. And then when I came here, it's like, whoa, everyone, all my classmates have been doing this since they were, you know, they could draw like crazy. Mm-hmm. I'm so far behind them. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's like, oh, this identity crisis of going, oh, actually I'm terrible. I can't do art. Like,
that's amazing though. Cause that's like when you start to pull it out of yourself of, no, I can do it and push forward. There's an interesting comment you made earlier about people saying that there's no money in art. In Australia, I found the same thing. Like, when I was trying to do it, it was like back then it was very much people would say that and you would believe it. And just think on that topic or on that point, I'm so glad that we didn't listen because like the world has changed and now
that's right.
It's like unbelievable potential and opportunity for us. Yeah. But I want to also understand, so I've been reading a book lately, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which is a finance book about, I've realized that I haven't like learned enough about numbers and stuff like that. And I want to upgrade it on that side of myself. Having an accounting background or family life, one of the big things from that book that I learned was that in school, they don't sort of teach you like how to read the numbers and the real finances, I guess. And because you had that accountant family at home, is there anything that you learned there, I guess, that helped you today? Like things that were not sort of taught at school?
I think maybe the benefits of going through like a Singapore education system is that they were so hard on your math and science that I did learn a few things. So when I went to university, I realized that even though my, actually what I thought was good art skills, which were not good compared to the rest of the class.
Yeah.
My ability to write a report, to calculate, to make a business plan was actually better than most of the classmates. And I realized that that's when the all the math and science training came to the foreground.
Mm-hmm.
And so from I think in around university time is when I went, actually, I have this balance of, you know, I've got some arts and design skills and I've got this business and accounting and mathematics, which other people may not have.
Yeah.
And kind of is almost that mix,
yeah.
The balance between them.
Absolutely.
That's.
Sorry, I know we want to get back to the Swinburne and kind of move on, but you mentioned something very critical. You said you felt like you had an identity crisis because there were only 9 people in this arts class.
Yeah.
I wanted you to kind of dig into that deeper because we've got a lot of audiences who have kind of gone through different experiences to really express themselves professionally, artistically. So if you can kind of just delve into that a little bit and explain that a bit more.
When I said identity crisis, I meant as in the fact that you grew up thinking that, oh, I'm really good at this. I'm really good at art, or I'm really good at drawing. Mm. I'm really good at design. I'm really good at, it could be something else. It could be, I'm very good at sports.
Yeah.
Or I'm very good at a particular thing. And you know, when you get going, like a fish go into a bigger pond and go into a bigger pond, and then suddenly you realize that, oh, actually, what I thought was kind of special wasn't that special. Everyone's out streets ahead.
Sure.
And that, I think, can sometimes cause an identity crisis going, oh, I thought I've always wanted to be this, and now that's not what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I think different people experience that at different times in their life.
Absolutely.
Maybe it could be earlier, it could be in school, it could be in college, it could be much later after you've established a career and I've always wanted to be, I don't know, a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into my profession and I'm like, oh, actually, this is not what I envisioned.
What it's cut out to be. Yeah,
that's
actually,
right.
That actually happened to me once. I was at school, I was really good at track. Like I thought, I didn't do any training or anything. I was like the fastest in my school. So I thought, I'm going to do this. I'm so good at this. I don't even have to train. But I went to the actual, like, I can't remember what it was called, but like the upper level where other schools all came together to compete.
Yeah.
And I lost so bad. I know exactly what you mean. In that moment, I realized I have to either train and get good at this or nothing at this.
Pick
I need
something
to,
else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I picked something else.
Yeah, clearly.
I think that's kind of, that's why maybe people have started to think about, oh, maybe I want to do something else. Mm-hmm. Maybe I want to have a side hustle, or I want to have another project, or because they started having doubts about that their career path is the right one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, actually, I want to explore this other side of my skill set or my personality or my interests.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing how sometimes when you reach, I don't want to call it a dead end, but it's kind of like a crossroads and you go, okay, I've spent an X amount of years trying to do this thing. In comparison to my peers, they're light years ahead of me, but I've still got this thing on the side that I haven't really tapped into that still gets me excited and I'm still passionate about it. Let me explore that before reconsidering what this other option kind of looks like.
I think to that point as well, I found that in design school, like all the designers that they're showing us have like 40 years on me. So I'm comparing myself to these designers who I can't compete with at this time.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess also identifying on that level of as well of I need to upskill, I need to like pay my dues before I can get to that level. Like absolutely. I can't expect to be 1 year into a course and be designing on this level.
Yeah.
So things also identifying that as well. There's a bit of a road to take.
Definitely. Sorry. So looping back to Swinburne, you came to Melbourne first from Singapore.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. So straight out of Singapore, I came to Melbourne to study design. I wanted to do design. I think that was like, okay, it's definitely design.
Okay.
But what kind of design? I don't know. Mm. There's products, there's industrial,
there's fashion, there's architecture, there's all sorts.
There's videos, there's film, there's animation. Even I think I picked something that people don't call it anymore, multimedia.
Yeah.
I mean, those were the days. But, and multimedia was still kind of like, you like technology and you like design, but you can try all these different things.
Sure.
And so I kind of had a play with different media and somehow found myself designing websites, interactive, and really loved it. And so that became kind of the first job, was a web designer.
Okay. And obviously, that's when you started working at the ad agency and kind of...
That's right, working in agencies, which then... I think when you're working in an agency, there is this... certainly when I was coming out as a designer, there is a... You want to get into the... There's definitely kind of a certain glamorous aspect about being in advertising, I think, that you want to get there and become a senior designer, become an art director, became the head of a team. And
so the entire kind of progress that you have in an ad agency from the outside, it looks very glittery and shiny and you're like, fuck yeah, madman, you know,
that's what
I want to get at, you know? And that entire kind of, I don't know, I guess persona or that lifestyle. I was similar because I started at Ogilvy in Auckland, New Zealand. And I'm like, fuck yeah, I made it. I'm in, you know, like there's beautiful people around. There's awesome work. There's like butcher paper everywhere. But then after 6 months, I was like, this is foul. I'm out. this is not for me.
It sounds like we're getting to a bit of a reality now. So then what's the flip side of the glamour? Like once you're in?
Elaborate.
So they're talking about like the glamorous side.
Yeah, why did you get this illusion?
So then,
right.
Yeah, so yeah, once you're in and you realize that the glamour maybe isn't real or like what is that? You dig into that, I guess.
Yeah, I... Damn, you're putting me on the spot, man.
That's okay.
We're chatting with you in here. Yeah, I guess you go into it thinking, all right, I can talk, I can hold a conversation. I'm passionate about advertising. I'm passionate about print. I love photography, all that stuff. These are kind of the factors that gravitated you towards this opportunity to start off with.
Yeah.
But then once you go in there and you actually start peeling the different layers and you're like, actually, this is not what it's cranked out to be. Like, these people are egotistical. It's a massive rat race. It's a little bit confronting because you're coming into it from the creative creative side rather than the business, the hustle. And so you're faced with that kind of ugliness from the very beginning. I call it ugliness because that's my opinion. You know, that's just when I first got into it.
So how does that translate to the work, like to that pure creative, the output? How does that translate to that? Does it affect the output at all?
Well, I was in client services at the time. So it their creativity... I wasn't exposed to the creativity I thought I would be, but coming in as a junior, it was mainly just admin.
Oh, I see.
So it's just pure admin. You're on the floor. You're doing all this stuff. So what you had in your mind going into it wasn't what actually materialized.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. So the fun ideation part of it didn't exist for you.
What you were sold was pretty much not what you got.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I can add to that because I was in from the creative side and I walked through the creative ranks and I think that what I realized was that there's consequences, there's a cost to everything, right?
Of course.
So you get into there's a cost to constant pitching, which is the nature of the ad agency world. Is there's a lot of pitching and there's a lot of winning, but there's also a lot of losing.
And when you lose, you lose hard. When you win, you win
hard.
That's
right. So it can be really up and down.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. Not for everyone.
No.
You know, if you love rejection, yeah, great. who does? But I think it's more than that. There's also up and downs. Like when you win, it's great. It's the most amazing feeling on top of the world. And sometimes what I found, I think what got me disillusioned a little bit at that time was just the churn and burn nature of projects, of campaigns.
So sorry, just to jump in. So when you say win, do you mean winning a client or winning an idea, like getting an idea across the line, or what does a win mean?
Winning a client.
Okay.
That would be like the biggest win that you can get. But when you lose, when you, unfortunately, for example, it happens, you lose clients. When another agency wins the clients, you see and the entire team losing their jobs.
Mm.
And
that
because, you know, if you have
team facilitated that client as their main client, is that kind
of
why?
Well, I mean, when you forecast, there are certain clients that you want to go after. And if you land those clients, then you can keep cash flow going or you can hire more people.
Yep.
But as soon as that drops, that client drops, that it's not just a dropping client, it's dropping cash flow, it's dropping
everything,
resources. Yep. So when you lose, you truly lose, and you pay the cost, not just monetary, but in resources and everything.
That's right. So you're gonna
so because as a person who's not the business owner, someone who's pitching the ideas, if you lose, you're also feeling like you're letting the team down because you know what's going to happen.
Potentially. I mean, if the agency cannot find another client to take over, to have as much demand for work, to keep a bunch of people all employed, then that means seeing your colleagues go. And so it's a very high pressure situation, and some people love it. Love to thrive on it.
Some people
very much,
yeah.
Because you want to go from that to another one. But I think it's not so much the winning and losing that really kind of bothered me. It was more the churn and burn. So campaigns come and go, and we will build things, but those things were not meant to last.
Mm-hmm.
So because they're for a single campaign, and then it's gone. You put it all up, you take it all down.
Yeah.
And there's an element of I'm just going from that one more campaign to another campaign to another campaign. And I think at the heart of who I am as a person is I like building things that last. And so like user experience is about building a product and improving, you know, incremental improvement and making
100%.
better and better over time.
And there's so much empathy poured into it. It's not just, hey, I'm going to develop this shiny thing. It's going to stand up there for 4 weeks and then we take it down. And all that emotion and all that creativity that was poured into it is literally down the drain. It's not something that you're enhancing and building on.
Well, you have to build that empathy. That empathy happens over time as well, as you're incrementally growing the thing. I think this segues well into, so all of this stuff that we're talking about from agency and ad agency point of view, how did you, I guess, model Yump to be not that, I guess, to improve on those and that sort of model?
I think it goes back to the desire to find meaning. I think that's quite a common thing among people, is that we try to find meaning in our work. If you ask, there have been surveys going around, if you ask someone what do you want out of your job, and like meaning is usually ranked very highly for people. I want meaning out of my work. And I think in that search for meaning from my work, I wanted to build an agency with Simon at that time that would give us that
satisfaction.
And that means helping clients or helping companies or brands, organizations that are making a difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we started with not-for-profit clients, and they're still a big part of our portfolio. And that hasn't changed because we realized that as we're working with them, we really feel really energized because the work is not only just a website, for example, or an app. It goes beyond that. It's providing services. It's helping connect people who might be disadvantaged or who may have a disability, or connect them or make them live better lives and connect with society. And
do you think your upbringing and where you come from adds to that drive of wanting to work with people who are disadvantaged or tapping into the nonprofit sector?
Potentially, my parents have always been very big on education. So all through, I guess, my childhood and their careers, I've been exposed to this idea that, well, if you have money, give it back to education. Because if you give money to education, that means someone who may not have the education gets the education that they need to then be a step up. And once you have an education, you know, the world is your oyster. And so I think that was a strong element.
Yep. And I mean, to your parents' testament, is they're quite, by the sound of it, they're very charitable people that like to give money to people in need and kind of education and that side of it. But also, it seems like that entrepreneurial spirit has also come through, because it just doesn't, with you, just doesn't stop at design. It doesn't stop at creating platforms when opportunity kind of comes through to you. It's just like you've got this side where you want to benefit people who are disadvantaged, but at the same time, you know how to go about it. So it's a business. So kind of talk us through that balance between, I guess they're on two different spectrums, right? Because that's, one is like empathy and the other one is just like profit and running a business.
So the best way I can put that is, to give money, you need to make money. Mm-hmm. So it actually is more in line with each other than you think. The biggest philanthropists in the world are also some of the biggest billionaires that we have in the world. Mm-hmm. And so I think when you make more money, there comes a time where you start to go, well, what's the point of having all this if I can't make the world a better place? Mm-hmm. I wish more billionaires would donate more money.
Definitely.
I think that's a great movement that we need to keep pushing for people who are in a financially better position to give money away. Mm. But I think that balance have always been there. So the entrepreneurial spirit is, I don't think I went into business wanting to make money. I went into business wanting to make it succeed, right? You have it's like a project. You want it to grow and be amazing. And if it makes money, great. Awesome. Yeah. That's great. And then if we can make money with a meaning, so helping people in need and having an impact more than just making profit. Mm-hmm. So I'm a firm believer in, have you heard about the 1% movement, which is, give 1% of your profit or give 1% of your time. Mm-hmm. I think business for good, if you can, and the same thing happens with Shudo Ninja. So we've been partnered with YGAP from day one. So it used to be $1 per subscription will go to YGAP.
Oh, that's awesome.
For Shudo Ninja.
Cool.
And we still partner with them now on a yearly basis for for example, for the upcoming Black Friday campaign. So Black Friday is all like consumerism, so sales.
Yeah,
but for every subscription, we will give $2 to YGAP, which is a charity helping. Mm-hmm. They help discover entrepreneurs in communities like South Africa and Kenya. So helping entrepreneurs think of ideas that will help the community in those places.
Okay.
And so we really love what YGAP does. And so, And so I think there's always an element of, if you are a great entrepreneur and you can make money, you should also think about doing something with that.
Definitely.
Yeah, totally. I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it seems you're very inspiring. You're very driven. You tackle design from an empathy angle. You want to help people. You've got your agency. You've got your photography side hustle. The Studio Ninja, who serve photographers. So what I want to know is, how do you maintain Ewan's sanity? Because it seems like you've got your hands into a lot of things and you've just come in from the gym. So you're this kind of this freaking Superman that's making Luke and I feel like shit. So what I want to know, what does Ewan do to kind of deal with the pressure, to deal with balancing everything out? Because I'm assuming, and we haven't even tapped into your personal life and we don't need to, but how does Ewan deal with life's pressures? Like, what do you do to kind of check out a little bit and just have some Ewan time? What does that look like?
I think having it's a difficult question for me to answer, but I'll try my best.
Okay.
But I think having a stable relationship at home. Mm-hmm. So I've been with my partner for more than 14 years.
Yeah,
just
wow.
Just got married.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Actually, you got married here in Australia?
Weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
So last weekend,
You should have said something. We could have had some serious drinks here.
Sorry, I didn't mean to drop that in the middle of the podcast.
No, that's a huge milestone. Congratulations.
Yeah, anyway, so I think having that having a close close friends mm-hmm. and family is important, keeping kind of sane, again, sanity. Mm. I don't have children. Mm-hmm. So that means for some people, managing children at home and having a very demanding work life is difficult. Mm. But because I don't have kids, so it's a little bit easier for me to take more hours out of my day for my work.
Sure thing.
I certainly think that having that balance is really important. And I think keeping in good health, also having some downtime, I think, is really important. Just trying to keep the balance. Yeah.
What do you do in that downtime? Are you kind of meditating? Are you going back to art? Are you out there shooting with your camera? What is that relaxing time look like?
I wish I could say that I'm doing art or meditating or doing photography. Actually, just catching up with friends.
Okay.
And talking to people actually really helped for me.
Okay.
I'm actually by nature a very private person, mm-hmm. so I don't like sharing information. That's just like my upbringing.
Well, I mean, you've done great thus far. You know, you've given us a lot of insights.
Well, I've been trying. Yeah, it's like I'm learning how to be more open and to share more. But I think I'm going through a coaching program. So having a coach really helps.
Wow.
And
like
just
a life coach or
like a business coach.
Sure.
So I'm going through a program called A Key Person of Influence, mm-hmm. which is held by Dent. Anyway, a shout out to them. They're awesome.
Awesome.
But they really helped me a lot. So just understanding things like what do I want in life and what do I need to do to make those goals come true.
Mm-hmm.
And also actually sometimes really enjoying the journey is important. So I'm just having this conversation with my sister on the weekend, you know, like, you start to get caught up in, I couldn't get everything I wanted to do done. I'm behind on all these things. Why do I always feel so frustrated? And my sister reminded me to enjoy the journey. And because I think we often just want to set goals and want to get to the goal. Mm. But actually, if you get there, then what's next?
You look back and it's just been one big blur and you're like, what the fuck did I do to get here?
That's right.
That's so true. I'm in a freelance job at the moment where I'm trying to get to that next checkbox. Like I'm at the pointy end of the like hi-fi part. And I totally just realized like yesterday, I'm in the best part of the hi-fi where I just threw out a couple of ideas. They didn't like them. So I can like now refactor them into, I didn't like them either. So we can get them into a place where we're all happy.
Mm.
And I realized yesterday, like I'm actually really enjoying this phase. And more importantly, I'm enjoying educating the client on how this phase works.
Mm.
Cause it's interesting when you throw out pass for feedback, an idea. It's interesting when you do that and you know it's not the best idea, but you're kind of just testing to see like where they're at and like if I'm around the money, I guess. And it makes you think about how do I inform them what I'm actually doing to reduce their anxiety. Because they also think to myself, if they receive that, if they don't like it, they think I'm a shit designer because the next one's gonna be way better, but they don't actually know that.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm segueing this into is, so it sounds like with this coaching, they're kind of maybe mentoring a little bit. Would you see them as mentors? And do you have other mentors around you as well?
So it's a program. I don't have like a one-on-one coach, for example, mm-hmm. but I attend like every 2 months, I will go through a workshop for a full day. So that's the business side.
Mm-hmm.
But I also try to keep kind of a close circle of friends and I say people that you trust,
yeah.
that you talk to on a basis. And my sister is being kind of great in that respect. My family's been really good.
Mm.
Just helping me kind of work out some of the things that kind of bother you,
yeah.
bother me from time to time.
Yeah.
So talking about enjoying the journey was just a recent conversation because we're so caught up in goals, like you said, and sometimes not going, well, if actually it's okay to be a little bit uncomfortable, it's mm-hmm. because that's when you're learning.
Absolutely.
If you get there, then you're not learning anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as enjoyable when you actually get to the goal. So actually on the way there, whether it's, you know, putting out ideas for hi-fi wireframes or could be trying to get a new client or could be putting into trying to make a new feature for the product.
Sure.
It is frustrating. It is challenging, but that's where the fun is.
Definitely. 100%. Definitely.
Yeah.
So do you think you've figured out what that balance looks like in terms of juggling all these balls in there?
Actually, the short answer is no, because I think there's always an element of chaos. Mm-hmm. Especially whether it's side hustle or actually running a full-blown business, mm-hmm. it's always chaotic.
Absolutely.
So it's like, how do I make sense of all this chaos? Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is being okay with the fact that it's a little bit chaotic.
Great, mm-hmm. great. Because what I wanted to tap into, that's a great point. How do you handle failure?
I think you see, if I try to see failure as a learning opportunity. I mean, it's the same with rejection. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't like getting rejected. Mm-hmm. But the nature of being in business is you can get rejected several times a day.
100%.
Or failing several times a week.
I can definitely identify with that with my side hustles for sure.
That's right. So perhaps when it happens, it's like I'm trying to tell myself a trigger saying this is now a learning opportunity. Yes, you did not succeed. Yes, you got rejected. Mm. But can we get some positive feedback out of it? Can I maybe ask the person who turned down my proposal or didn't agree to something that I proposed? Why? Why? And try to learn from that. Like if there was one thing that could change, what would it be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So I guess are there any key learnings that you could like embark on us a little bit of, whether it be on these proposals or on the past, like how long has Yump been? Like 7 years?
This is our sixth year.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like in this whole time span, any key learnings you could like drop on us?
I'm gonna think about this a little bit.
I think he's done that throughout the entire chat, but that's definitely a good question.
I guess learning spurred from failure, so flipping the failure into a learning specifically.
Yeah, so because I'm a user experience designer by training, mm-hmm. And what I've really enjoyed, for example, working with on Shido Ninja, is the opportunity to constantly ask questions. So have little interviews, little research sessions with our customers. It's been like really invaluable. Just putting aside some time to keep asking questions that will give you the feedback that you need to get to the next stage, So that has been, I think, the ability to constantly react, to changes and to technological changes, to new competition, has been mitigated to a large extent by taking the initiative to always ask questions.
Absolutely.
To always find out new things, to always be willing to improve and adapt and change. Mm-hmm. So that's been kind of I guess something that I've learned in the last.
Have you used those skills where you've been given a rejection, but you use those skills so well that you've managed to turn the entire situation around and bring that opportunity back?
Actually, it happens more often than I think. Right. Because now you're asking me and I'm going, I'm trying to think of this big thing.
Yeah.
But actually, it happens. I realize now that it happens quite regularly, especially with Studio Ninja, when we have so many photographers using the app and coming in as new customers and saying, I don't like it, and then leaving. And we generally try to say, what happened? Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Yeah.
And as soon as start to unpack some of their frustration, we realize that actually we have a solution.
Definitely.
And you kind of went, what do you think about that? And they're like, I didn't realize that if I did that, then my problem will be solved.
Yep.
So it's like using your expertise, I guess, to have that conversation and really uncover that problem.
It's an educational process. I mean, the reason why I asked that, because as we were talking about how to handle failures and rejections, during my day job, I write proposals. I go out there, I meet people and try to always propose new approaches to do different things, with innovation and technology. And one of the clients I was going after, I was set dead. I was like, I'm going to get this client. And if I don't, I'm going to be out for at least 2 weeks, like crying somewhere, because it's going to affect me so much. And they got back to me and it was a rejection at the time. And I'm like, no, hold on. This doesn't make sense. Like I've poured everything into this. I've taken time to understand, but there was a learning there because I thought I had done enough. I thought I had learned enough about them. But then once I picked up the phone and I just had a frank conversation, I was like, hey, look, what's actually going on here? Because I thought I've done X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. I thought we were on the same track, et cetera, et cetera. But I managed to kind of unearth more and extract more from them. And they were forthcoming, which helped the situation. So quickly, within a day, I went back, reconfigured our approach, went back to them. And they were like, you've actually got it bang on. Yeah, fuck it. We want to come with you. I'm like, oh my God, that was the best feeling ever. But that happens when you give yourself the opportunity to kind of sit back and think and not dwell on the rejection or the failure and just go, okay, I've taken that in my head. I've kind of figured out what went wrong. Let's see what other avenues kind of come up from it and then kind of capitalize on that a little bit. So, I mean, it seems like you do that day in, day out.
Yeah, I think you have to kind of leave your ego at the door.
Absolutely.
And I say that, like, we talk about master apprentice and flipping that. So now I'm the apprentice and my customer is the master. And so what can I learn from them? And just being very honest and very transparent as much as you can be in that situation when, you know, you're still kind of, maybe it's a little bit raw, you're still feeling the disappointment, it's still kind of stinging, but you got to just like, all right, like teach me, tell me something I don't know. Maybe I just don't, I don't get you. Maybe I'm.
That's so true.
Insightful. Like, that's cool.
I think fear, ego, pride, these are all barriers. And there were, I think there will be the end of your downfall type thing, you know, if you don't slowly start learning how to remove these things on a day to day. That's very insightful. I've never actually thought about it that way.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. It's like my mind is blown a little bit, that master and apprentice sort of thing. It's so
like
some true.
Jackie Chan shit. It's like flipping the script, you know?
So true.
So that's why Hong Kong background, Hong Kong movies that I watched growing up.
I have a slightly random question as we start to sort of wrap it up a little bit.
Yep.
It's on the names. Both names are quite abstract, I guess. Like if you think about it, our name, Side Hustle, is very, very literal. Can you maybe just dig into like Yump and Studio Ninja, the naming process and what they mean?
So people ask me all the time, what does Yump mean? And I always come up with like this like really sheepish answer. I'm like, it doesn't mean anything. So when we wanted to create Yump, we wanted an agency name that people will remember, very easy, very short. I think I was convinced that it has to be four letters and no more.
Okay.
I say inspired by my name, Ewan, so YU, and then trying to find something that kind of work. And eventually kind of settle on the word Yump because it was sort of kind of fun and positive. And
it rhymes with a few other words as well, you know, so it's kind of cool.
And the two descenders as well. So like thinking about the four letters and how the mock-up would be, like it fits in.
Yeah, so we have like Yumpiversary, Yumptastic. We sort of transform words with it. It's quite funny.
Yeah.
And then with Studio Ninja, actually, that I can't take credit for that. That was Chris who thought of the name. Not sure his thought process becoming Studio Ninja, but I knew it when I saw Studio Ninja. I was like, that's a cool name.
Mm-hmm.
And I think actually we have customers who say, oh, I just signed up with a free trial because I thought, what a cool name. And okay, great.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
That's cool. Ewan, this has been awesome, man. I mean, our last thing is to give you the opportunity to say any last words, but I'm blown away. Like there's been so many gems from this, but is there anything else you want to share with our listeners?
I sort of felt like I've exhausted all of my insights for on a Saturday morning at 10 a.m. I would need to like rest for a full week to get more nuggets back.
I mean, I'm not going to say sorry because it's been great.
No, it's been amazing.
No, it's been amazing for me too. Thank you
but,
so much. For
I mean, any last words you want to leave our audience with? Anything you want to share with us?
I guess if there's one thing is know when to, for me, what I enjoyed is knowing when to get help. So sometimes I think when, especially if you're very proud of your work and sometimes you're not maybe willing to get help. And so one of the big change that happened to me in the last year was saying, actually, I need a coach. I need to learn from someone else. to help me get better, because I kind of have exhausted everything that I think I know. And I guess, you know, going through whether it's a program you want to go through, or getting a one-on-one coach, or just having some advisor, or getting a mentor, that's been really, really great. And just kind of going, oh, okay, now there's someone else showing me the way, and it's not all on me. And because I think entrepreneurship, or whether it's a side hustle or it's a business, can be quite lonely.
Absolutely.
Like, you can be sort of feeling like, oh, I'm the only person who knows everything that's going on. And actually, there are people who will be willing to help. And actually, the power of your network is also very important. Like, your friends, you just don't know who your friends might know. One of the things that was really cool that happened in the last 6 months was I did a pitch of Studio Ninja at a competition, won the pitch, and there was a video of it. Happened to be on Facebook, so I just casually went, oh, there's a video of the pitch, I was just going to share it to my network. And when I did that, I did not realize that many of my friends did not know that I had Studio Ninja was going on.
Yeah, wow.
And didn't know that I was pitching it and looking for some ideas about investment. And so they said, oh, you know, I didn't know that this is happening. Now that I've seen the video, I could help you. I know so and so and so and so. And suddenly the door just opened.
That's amazing.
And I was having all these conversations with people that I didn't know that I had access to.
Yeah.
And so I think that just ask and be willing to ask for help. I think
definitely. I was one of those people, actually. I saw it on LinkedIn and I was like, well, wow, Ewan's like killing it. Like, I didn't realize how far this product has gone. But it's so humbling also to hear, like, 6 years in and you're still, your ego is at the door to understand you need help and to, like, to get to that next level, because it would be easy and tempting, I guess, to just be like, nah, I've got this. I've been doing this for a while now. Like, I can do it. It's really, really, really inspiring. I really, really like that.
I'm very inspired. I'm about to go start up 10 more businesses from now.
Good to it.
So do you want to maybe plug your socials? Like, how can people find you?
Okay, great. Well, it's Yump and Studio Ninja. I mean, I love both businesses. So Yump is a UX agency, yump.com.au. You can find us on Instagram, Yump Digital, at Yump Digital, and then Studio Ninja. We're also on Instagram, and we have a website, studioninja.co. That's what I can
Brilliant.
Say.
Brilliant. This has been great. Thank you so much for coming out on a Saturday morning. The weather's been a bit miserable out there.
Not as bad as last week.
No, it wasn't as bad, but still pretty cold. I thought we were in summer already, but that's not the case.
Oh, it's Melbourne. You're gonna be okay with the unpredictability of the weather here.
Exactly. Nonetheless, this has been great, and I'm pretty sure our audience are gonna absolutely love this one.
Yeah, can't wait to put it out.
Yeah.
All right, sure. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
No worries. Awesome.